Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
First and goal at the 8. Motion toward us by Hamler. It's Clifford up the middle to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the lead. Third down and 9, their own 42. Here they come. Back he goes over the middle. Hamler's got it 50. Breaks a tackle, far side 45. He's got Dotson in front of the 30. Makes a move to the 25, 20. Far corner, 10, 5. Touchdown, Penn State. 58 yards, and the Nittany Lions are on the board again. Four-man front. Back goes Jackson. Good pocket. Delivers. Intercept at the goal line. Picked off. It's Tariq Castro-Fields who comes home to Maryland and picks it off. First and goal at the 3. Clifford, Slade, up the middle, touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the Tariq Castro-Fields interception, and they march 95 yards. Back to pass, blitz coming, throws, caught 10-yard line, Bowers to the 5, touchdown, Penn State. Nick Bowers, and what a job by the freshman Noah Kane on blitz pickup. Third and 5, Maryland 37. Clifford gets the snap from Michael Mennett. Four-man rush. Steps up in the pocket. Opening. Dumps it off to Brown, 30. Journey, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Penn State. Got a block from Daniel George at the 10 and took it to the house. Mennett snaps it. Back goes Clifford. Blitz coming. Steps up. Opening. He'll throw. Caught by Bowers, 40. 45, 50. Nick, 45. Breaks a tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15. Nick Bowers to the 10 and rolled down inside the 10-yard line. The longest reception of his career. They show blitz. They bring it. Levis will keep it himself to the 5. Lowers the shoulder. Touchdown, Penn State. Will Levis. Play clock down to 6. And Levis takes it. And it'll be Levis keeps it himself and walks into the end zone. Touchdown, Penn State, with 49 seconds to go. The Nittany Lions win the Big Ten opener, and they do it with relative ease. 59-0.
Thought it was probably one of the more complete games that we have played in our 6 years. Really kind of in all three phases. You know, played at a high level defensively. That team's been putting up a bunch of points. Against a bunch of different people, challenging schemes, challenging personnel, and our defense, you know, played lights out. Offensively, I thought Sean was on fire. Really handled being on the road for the first time in a Big Ten environment. I thought the environment there to start the game was challenging as well, and I thought we handled it really well. Just some things to jump out at you. PSU is not allowed a point in the first quarter this season. We're one of 8 schools to have done that in the country. 13 different receivers caught balls, which is great, spreading the love around. Sean Clifford broke the Penn State record for passing yards in the first half with 287 yards. Clifford had 300 yards passing game with 398 yards. It's the 40th 300-yard passing game in PSU history, and the third highest in PSU history. We converted we converted our first 7 third downs and finished 9 of 13. I actually think we were probably better in that because late in the game when we had the 2s in and they were pretty much going cover 0 and blitzing every single play, we really played well on third down on offense and defense. I thought it was a big improvement and probably one of the big differences in the game. First shutout since 2017, and haven't given up a touchdown to Maryland in 12 quarters. So, keep points off the board, create more possessions and more opportunities for your offense. It's significant. The challenge was, we still weren't doing great with time of possession. If you look at the first half, because we had some one play drives and things like that. But yeah, our defense, I think, is playing with a lot of confidence right now. And I think the thing that probably goes unnoticed is, this talks about us not having a whole lot of shutouts. Well, some of the time we give up shutouts because we play so many guys. So what I thought was so impressive tonight is we played seconds and we played thirds and we played fourths, and they went in and executed the defense at a really high level. So I think that's really good progress. That was the one critique I said in the locker room after the game is our twos and threes on offense have got to play up to the standard. But, yeah, I thought the turnovers were significant early in the game, got the crowd out of it, allowed us to swing the momentum and go from there.
Head coach James Franklin after what was really a complete game by Penn State in a lot of ways. They really went out and the Jan Johnson interception, which was not played there. I think the two biggest plays of the game were Jan Johnson's interception and Tariq Castro-Field's interception. And Jan Johnson's interception, you know, this place is fired up. They're really into what's going on. And to be honest with you, Jan made up for a mistake from somebody else and did a terrific job on what was supposed to be a switch. And he read it and picked it off, and then the two penalties got it to the eight, and then Clifford scored. I think James Franklin, again, early on, takes that time out because the play clock's down to two, because he wanted it to still be first and goal at the eight instead of first and goal at the 13. They score there. Then the play to Hamler. Now it's 14-0. Then Maryland puts together its only sustained drive of the night. And Tariq Castro-Fields baited him into that interception. Baited him into it. That's what a veteran does. You can bait a quarterback, and he did. And that stopped the drive. Then Penn State went 95 yards the other way, and that ended the game. That was it. And after that, Maryland did very, very little. They had 10 first downs, played a lot of people again. It was just a really, really good win. Now, you get ready for the next one. Well, in getting ready for the next one, that means it's Purdue. It's not going to Iowa, which, by the way, Iowa's going to be 7:30, by the way. It's going to be a night game. Who has it? I have no idea. But the game is 7:30 out at Iowa. I know. What about Michigan? Yeah, you know what? My father taught me, I've had so many people ask me about Michigan, as if we have some sort of inside knowledge as to what's going on. You know when I find out about kickoffs? About an hour before you do. Hey, by the way, Steve, the game's going to kick, like, take Iowa. By the way, Steve, the game's going to kick off at 7:30. Your time's going to be 6 o'clock. Then about an hour later, a release comes out and says what time to kick off. So I find out an hour ahead of time. Just don't worry about stuff you can't control. Can't control it? Don't worry about it. Simple as that. Now, as for Purdue, they've got a lot of people out. That doesn't really matter. It matters overall in the game. But when you look at Rondale Moore's out, Elijah Sindelar's out, so the quarterback and the wideout are both out. Got hurt in the same play, for goodness sakes. Ferguson, offensive tackle's out. Two running backs that have been out all season anyway, Fuller and Worship, both out. But Doru actually is coming off a 94-yard rushing game against Minnesota, so doesn't have the experience they do, but he's coming off a really good game. And obviously two key defenders that everybody knew happened to be out. Everybody knew that Lorenzo Neal was out. They knew that Marcus Bailey, the linebacker, is a really good player, out. So they got a lot of players out. But you've got to play who shows up. And, you know, if you sit there and you fall asleep on it, because I think in a lot of ways, Wisconsin fell asleep a bit with Northwestern. Northwestern usually plays Wisconsin really tough, and they did this time. But Northwestern doesn't have much offense, which in the end killed. But Wisconsin just kind of early game, throwback uniforms, so it just seemed to They weren't sharp after the Michigan game. Well, that's what you're trying to avoid here. You want to stay sharp the entire time. You want to stay sharp. You got something pretty good going here right now. And so since you've got something going that's pretty good right now, keep it going. Just keep getting better. Now, remember, I've talked about the two lines. Here's the talent line in that 90 to 100 range again, you know, as I hold a hand up. You know, well, the experience line took a big step forward, getting closer and closer to meeting the talent line. That's what happened Friday night. This will be a test of maturity. You go into a game like this, you will be a big favorite, especially with the players they have out. You can't pay attention to who is not there. You got to just pay attention to who is there, and you got to play your game. You can't get sloppy. And I'm sure that's going to be the theme for James Franklin all week. You can't get sloppy. And if you're wondering about Micah Parsons, he can play the entire game. Because the ejection for targeting happened in the first half of the game, he has now actually served the penalty because he did not play in the second half at all. So he is available for all 60 minutes. We would at least get that out of the way. But a lot going on today. We'll get the perspective of Chris Mack today on the firing of Clint Hurdle in Pittsburgh. Then R.J. Anderson on Major League Baseball. And then the final half hour, Dave Cecchini is going to join us. So we've got a lot going on. It's great to have you with us. The Steelers play the Bengals tonight. Big-time watch party over at Sean's place.
Ah, you're invited, buddy. You have anything going on tonight? Stop over. We'll fire up the grill and hope for a good game. That's all we can hope for.
Yeah, it should be a beauty.
I will say this, though. The teams that the Steelers have played so far have a combined record of only one loss. So I'm kind of taking that in stride going into tonight's game. But Mason's got to get some help. They got to get some well balanced offense going.
But I think they need to help him.
Oh, absolutely.
I think one of the more important things that you can do when you are a coordinator calling plays is you've got to be able to to tailor what is the strong point of the people that and what they can do. I think the Steelers' game plan against San Francisco was so conservative. They were trying not to make mistakes. I didn't think they took advantage of a big guy that has a big, strong arm. What would you think? You thought nothing.
Speechless. Run that past me again. I was talking to Kyle.
Kyle, we're trying to do a show here, man.
I know. Putting out a fire.
I thought we had a guy for that.
I know. He's a little busy. Now go ahead and run that past
about
me.
Him? Is it fire about him again?
No, nothing about Kevin at all. No.
Obviously it is. All right, so let's...
No, we're just digging something up from 2 years ago. We're good.
I said you need to take advantage of what the strength of a player is, and I thought that... And maybe it was because it was the first start and so forth. I just felt like they were very buttoned down in their approach and didn't take advantage of a guy who has a big, strong arm like he does.
He definitely has a big, strong arm, for sure. Where's James Conner been?
Yeah, I could tell you where he's been. He fumbled.
Yeah, exactly.
He fumbled with a key part of the game.
Topi has that in the rearview mirror, and they can get some well-balanced offense going. And the burning question is still out there. Who is the number two wide receiver? Is this the time when James Washington can finally step up? You already have the rapport between Mason and James from their college days at Oklahoma State. So, because they're just going to continue to double. They can continue to double team and triple team Juju out there. And if they don't think James is a threat, okay, yeah, we got their top street guy covered. Let's, you know, they got to get some balance.
Here's the key. Bengals are bad. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy serving this valley for decades. Auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be, your insurance needs, they'll take care of it. Bundle. They'll find you always the best price, and their customer service is second to none. I mean, they really take care of you because you're not a number to them. You count. All right. Penn State, Purdue Saturday. We talked about who's out for Purdue. Here's the first of all, anybody can come up with obviously a, you know, I was impressed by Plummer when he stepped into the game against Minnesota Saturday. I got a chance to watch some of that. And I thought as the game went, and I think playing against TCU helped him, but I thought he got better and better as time went in that game. Doru gave them something they haven't had all year. They have not had a running game all year. They had gone into the Minnesota game averaging only 68 yards a game rushing or some number like that. Doru had 94, and he accounted for 3 touchdowns in the game. A couple rushing, 1 receiving. So that part got better. But look, Moore is the guy they designed all this around, and Sindelar they designed all this around. They're not going to have either one. They at least know going into the week that they aren't going to play. All right. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You want to deal with the best. I don't care if you have one auto, home, life, business, a bundle, whatever your insurance needs may be. Purdy Insurance will take care of all of them. They'll make sure you're completely insured, and they'll also make sure along the way that you'll get the best price. And then if anything ever happens, man, do they go to work. Customer service means everything to them. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. So how did our high school gang do on Friday night? I obviously have no idea.
Shikellamy, an easy time over Central Mountain. 50-14, Central Mountain with three turnovers early on in that ball game, and they just didn't get out of that. Seawins Grove on Friday night, very impressive win over Loyal Sauk. Okay. So they are even at 3-3, and Lewisburg on Saturday night fighting off not one but two weather delays, which totaled 2 hours plus. They didn't get the game started till close to 9 on Saturday night. A very good win, 31-10 over Bloomsburg. So kudos to Greg Wetzel and Justin Michaels for filling time during the weather delays. I automatically thought of you and Jack at Michigan State a couple of years ago as they were going through their time there Saturday night doing a bunch of recaps and just getting ready for the lightning to finally go away.
Wow, I didn't even know there was lightning there. Like I said, Saturday, I wasn't really... I went to Pittsburgh Saturday. You do things for your kids, and, you know, it's like nobody really cares about what I was doing, but I was getting... My son's father-in-law wanted to give him a snowblower. He lives in Rochester, New York, but he couldn't get it up to him. Well, I went down Saturday, picked it up, and then Sunday I drove to Rochester yesterday and dropped it off, so I was on the road the whole time. But good. That's great. Glad to hear about that. All right. So the Pirates made the big move. Clint Hurdle is out, 9 years on the job, three playoff berths along the way, all of them wild card berths, but they made the playoffs three times. They won 98 games in 1 year. But he's out. All right, with that, we bring in Chris Mack from Pittsburgh. He's never out with us. Chris, welcome. Great to have you with us.
All right, so they make the move with Clint Hurdle. Mm-hmm. Is this a sacrificial lamb move, or they just, or do they feel they just absolutely need a new direction?
Well, somewhat of a sacrificial lamb scapegoat type situation because Neil Huntington still has his job. I keep coming back this morning and kept looking at it yesterday afternoon through the lens of, you know, where's the leadership in this situation? When you look at an organization who's had as much trouble as they've had this season, whether it be the 4-24 stretch out of the All-Star break, whether it be the clubhouse altercations, we can run down the list of all the stuff that we've talked about all summer long.
And that's where you get a sense somebody's losing control of the clubhouse.
Right, exactly. And you know, so yes, Clint Hurdle deserved to lose his job. Unfortunately, Neil Huntington also deserved to lose his, and now he'll be in charge of the next managerial search, or a big part of the next managerial search, which leads a lot of people to wonder, how in the heck are they going to turn things around with the same player acquisition and development program in place? And that's where a lot of people are left scratching their heads today, wondering, why was this the only deck chair thrown off the deck of the Titanic? There's a lot more that needs to be done here. We still haven't heard from the owner outside of a few prepared statements on paper or via email this year. And he's still nowhere to be found. He sent the general manager to go up in front of the media yesterday afternoon and defend the move and defend the fact that he still has his own job. The president, Frank Coonley, nowhere to be found other than in statements, prepared statements. And so it leaves a lot of us, or at least me in particular, wondering, where's the leadership in this organization? Who's going to finally take charge and say, enough is enough? We need to set a course in the right direction, and it starts with me. I'll take the responsibility. Neil Huntington having to go up there and take that onus on himself, not that I feel bad for him in many ways, because he's sort of made his own bed over the last 4 years in the way he's built the organization, player-wise, personnel-wise. But, you know, that's not his job to do that. That's the president or the owner's job to go up there. And a lot of people have pointed out this morning, well, plenty of owners don't go out there and get in front of situations. But, you know, with the organization and the summer they've had, they're in desperate need of someone to sort of grab a hold of the wheel and say, look, we're not running aground. We have a plan, and this is what it is, and we still haven't seen Bob Nutting come out and do that.
All right. Is the entire coaching staff as well? I assume it's not just Hurdle, the whole staff?
That's the assumption, but to not get that announcement fairly soon after the conclusion of yesterday afternoon's game leaves everybody wondering. You know, Ray Searidge said yesterday afternoon that he expects he'll be out of a job, and at the same time, there may be some of these guys that they want to interview for that managerial position, or they may want to keep around. It's really hard to get a beat on how much change and how much turnover they really have an appetite for when they dispatch the manager, but then don't immediately dispatch his staff, and then also keep the general manager around who has a relationship with some of these guys. You know, Neil Huntington's relationship with Dave Jouse, who's one of the bench coaches, goes back over a decade. You know, Tom Prince's relationship with the organization goes back a ways. Jeff Bannister, who may be the lead candidate for this job, at least internally, was a part of this staff, if not in the dugout on a day-to-day basis. So I have a feeling we'll probably spend the next week or two in a fairly constant state of confusion about who's staying, who's going, and how all of this will settle down.
Because let me get to Ray Searidge for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously did a terrific job with A.J. Burnett. Not good, terrific. The first run through on Francisco Liriano did just a terrific job. Not good, I mean terrific job. But when it comes to younger pitchers, have they been able to get better under his tutelage?
I think that's a very fair question as to whether they've connected with young guys in the right way. Garrett Cole, Tyler Glasnow. There's so many case studies that are in exact opposition to each other, right? You know, they brought Charlie Morton back from the brink the first time, but then Charlie Morton goes off to Houston and Tampa and does what he's doing. And,
right.
I really think that in the case of Searidge, not to discount what the role that he had in it. He did a great job in the role that he had. Jim Benedict was a big part of it, who left the Pirates several years ago. Hurdle was even, philosophically, even though he has no experience pitching, Clint Hurdle was a big part of that.
Right.
As well. And so, in just the philosophy of, hey, let's beat the ball into the ground and shift our infielders. You know, when you look back at 2012, 2013 and how that worked. So philosophically, I don't know if they have an idea of what direction they want to go in as far as pitching staffs go. Do they want to embrace the idea of fastball, curveball, and letting starters just throw whatever is best for them? Or do they still look at themselves as a team that needs to shift into better positions in order to field when in reality they don't have a great infield? So they've got to get to the bottom of that before they decide if Ray Searidge is going to be a part of this going forward or not. I think just based on everything else that we've seen this summer, you know, when you've got the worst ERA in the National League, it's probably time to move on from the pitching coach, regardless of whether he thinks he has a great philosophical breakthrough in his back pocket or not.
The analogy I used earlier about Clint Hurdle was that he's the weekend repair guy at home who goes into the toolbox, needs a Phillips head screwdriver, and all he has is a straight edge. He didn't have a lot of, quote, tools to work with.
No, I think the one thing that's going to be looked back on, at least from my perspective, though, Steve, is that they didn't have the best tools in the world in 2013 and 14 either, or 15 for that matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some cases, we do have to give Neil Huntington credit. He goes out in 2015 and gets Jay Happ for the stretch drive when nobody thought that move would bear fruit.
And he was terrific, and Marlon Byrd was terrific. I mean,
right, Marlon Byrd in 13 when they were without Marte down the stretch. You know, Edinson Volquez, who nobody expected anything from, even the Liriano and Burnett signings, as you pointed out. Nobody expected anything out of those.
Right.
So, you know, Hurdle, at the time, we didn't necessarily think Clint Hurdle was being given the best tools then either. But between he and Neil Huntington, they found a way to make it work. The problem is baseball caught up to him, and they haven't found a different way to make it work over the last four seasons. And that's why, again, I kind of look at Huntington and Hurdle in concert, because they work together on so many things as far as philosophy goes, that until you replace that whole crew, you're still going to be stuck with some of the leftovers. And I don't know if there's, again, anybody in that organization, and Neil Huntington's at the top of the list as far as I'm concerned with baseball operations, that has the next great idea for how they're going to develop this club going forward.
How important is it, considering everyone, look, the budget's not going to change. I mean, maybe they'll increase the budget, but it really is not going to change. Neil Huntington's
right.
going to have to work under the confines of whatever budget structure they come up with. So let's be fair about that. How important is it, in your opinion, Chris, that they stick to a formula? Because I thought when it came to the Chris Archer deal, that was the one time they strayed from the formula and they got burned by it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Steve. They have to. I think they've gotten away. Let's put it this way. I don't think they have an idea of what their formula is right now. I think in seeing that the rest of baseball caught up to their ways after the 3 years of success that they had, you know, baseball's picked up on the fact that, okay, well, we'll shift our infields, you know, 60% of the time.
Sure.
We'll shift them based on count, not just based on hitter.
Right.
And, yeah, we'll take some pitchers and we'll encourage them to throw down in the zone and get ground balls. But we'll also take, and this is the new philosophy now coming in, if we're going to have launch angle guys at the plate, well, we don't want to throw downward plane into those bats coming up. So let's have guys that throw four-seamers that ride up in the zone and then snap off breaking balls. And I think what you're seeing is the Pirates realizing they don't have the talent pool right now, whether it be developmentally or at the major league level, to compete with that new age philosophy. And they also don't have the ability to compete with their, it seems funny to call it old school, even though it's only 6, 7, 8 years ago, with that old school philosophy. So they're stuck in the middle, and they're sort of trying to find their way in the dark, I think, because they don't have the flashlight to find their way. They're clawing at the wall, trying to just get to the end of the hallway as quickly as possible, because they don't have that, again, not to beat a dead horse, but I don't think they have that next great idea to sort of light the way and guide their way. Which is exactly why I felt like they needed to get rid of Neil Huntington as well and go out and find somebody who can at the very least say, hey, this is the direction we're going to build our organization in. For the next 3 to 4 years, let's focus on this and see where we come out on the other end, because I believe, or we believe, that that's the best way to build a team in this day and age, and they just don't have that from Neil Huntington.
By the way, very quickly, Steelers and Bengals tonight. I know you're going to be, I mean, even with a morning show, you're going to watch every single play.
Oh, sure, sure. We'll see if Randy Fichtner can remember that his quarterback is, in fact, a cannon-armed Big 12 quarterback who can fling the ball downfield.
Yeah. We'll find out if he can remember it or not.
It'd be nice to see some commitment to the running game, too, which he admitted after the Patriots game he kind of gave up on. So that offense has to get moving. I know they've lost a ton of talent, but
just so you know, I saw the Patriots defense. You probably should have given up on it sooner. All right, so Chris, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. We'll talk again soon.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Season hockey polls out. Penn State is the preseason favorite. 20 letter winners returning 82% of their total scoring from last year. But we'll see how it plays out. Hockey is fun, and the atmosphere over Pagula is fun. But they are the preseason Big Ten hockey favorite. I think Big Ten hockey has done a lot for the sport of college hockey. Notre Dame is second, Wisconsin third, Ohio State fourth, Minnesota 5, Michigan 6, Michigan State 7. Like I said, hockey's fun. Love the speed of it. Chris Ash out as the head football coach at Rutgers.
after they lost 52-0 to Michigan, I had a feeling that Rutgers was, only a gut feeling. It's nothing to do with anything else other than no inside knowledge or anything like that. I just had a gut feeling that they were going to do something. Also makes you wonder, you hear Greg Schiano's name brought up a lot. Oh, Greg Schiano is supposed to be the, quote, defensive coordinator for the Patriots this year, and then pulled out. You got to wonder if he knew some stuff ahead of time. It's just, I think it's a question worth asking. How about that? It's a question worth asking. California Governor Gavin Newsom did sign the bill that's starting on January 1st, 2023, that the California athletes can benefit from their likeness being used. So that gives the NCAA, to me, 39 months. And let's just be fair. Let's say 27 months, and then 12 months of deciding what to do after that. But 27 months to come up with their own plan. Now, if they want to go to court, like they did with the, which they go to court a lot. And believe me, being on retainer for, when you're on retainer with the NCAA, I mean, you're making a good living because they're in court a lot. This is the part that does baffle me a bit. If I'm a taxpayer in California, okay, well, yeah, I understand the purpose of the bill. I got it. But California's got a lot of problems. A lot of problems. Do I want my money being spent on court costs for this? Or do I want it for a bridge? Do I want it for shelters? What do I want it for? I think it's something that is at least worthy of asking the question. That's what my, that's the big bill my state government has passed? Really? Wow, okay. I think it, because if the NCAA decides to challenge this, then California's going to have to spend money, believe it or not, to go to court over and over and over again. Is that where I want my money spent? But this is not going to be the end of it. Here's the next part. The next part is that South Carolina is now considering similar legislation, and Florida is considering similar legislation. Now, that boxes the NCAA in. If you start looking at schools and saying you're in California, we can't hold a championship there, and we're not going to let you participate in championships. Well, now, if state by state by state by state starts passing this legislation, what are you going to do, eliminate everybody? Can't do that. And I think that becomes a huge problem. California's the first to do this. They could really box the NCAA in. I just think you need to come up with something. And again, the NCAA to me has 27 months to really come up with, even though it's 39 months away. Let's take that last year as let's use 27 months as a buffer, a cushion, a zone to work in, a no pressure zone to work in to get something done. Because there won't be any pressure on them until finally the final 12 months. You need to come up with something that is realistic with image and likeness. But at the same time, you have to go through as many unintended consequences as possible, and I'll give you one. What about the young man that signs, or woman, okay, woman, with Adidas? Well, does that now mean that they're not going to go to Penn State or Ohio State or Alabama because they're with Adidas? Does this then allow shoe companies? I'm just using this as an example because there obviously are many businesses that you can benefit. Does this then allow shoe companies, and we just went through the trial, to really be power brokers? Where they can start looking at student athletes and saying, you know, hey, your agreement's with us. You want to play basketball? Kansas is an Adidas school. You have to go there.